It's our Friday Media Roundtable here on Your Call. If you are in the Bay Area, check this out. You can join Your Call's Rose Aguilar for a special live show, Understanding the Caregiving Crisis. Assemblymember Matt Haney will be on the panel. You can join us Wednesday, July 9th at San Francisco's Main Public Library. Doors open at 5 o'clock. The live show starts at 6. Find out more information on our events page at kalw.org. According to university hospitals, 9 out of 10 prescriptions filled in the U.S. are for generic drugs. Generics aren't always cheaper, but on average, they are a big savings. The cost of generics is on average 80 to 85% less than brand name equivalents. But what do you know about the generic drug you might have just taken just now that you picked up at the pharmacy? What's in there? Is it really identical to the brand named medicine? Where was it made? Who's making sure it is what it is supposed to be? It falls to the FDA to oversee the ingredients and safety of imported generic drugs. A new ProPublica investigation raises serious doubts about how well it's doing its job. The reporting team spent over a year digging through records. It built a database of instances where the FDA banned the import of a drug over safety concerns about the factory that manufactured it. But then it issued exemptions to that company, allowing the imports to continue. Quoting from their new series, all told, the FDA allowed into the United States at least 150 drugs or their ingredients from banned factories found to have mold, foul water, dirty labs, or fraudulent testing protocols. Nearly all came from factories in India. Now, those drugs include those that treat, they're antibiotics, chemotherapy treatment, antidepressants, sedatives, and epilepsy medication. The primary article in ProPublica is Threat in Your Medicine Cabinet, the FDA's Gamble on America's Drugs. Megan Rose joins us now. She's one of the authors from the investigative team. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you. Thank you. So let's follow first the path of a generic drug. A pharma company patents a new product, is protected from duplication for X number of years, and that year, that timeline usually starts while it's still in development. And how long that's true depends on a number of factors. And then other companies can duplicate that formula and manufacture generic. Now, can just anybody hit the market with a generic form? And if not, who decides which company can corner the market?
So in order to sell a generic drug to Americans, you have to put together an application for the FDA. And that goes through many levels of review, through scientists and safety experts and compliance. And essentially, you have to tell the FDA how you're going to make it, because every formula is different for a generic. They kind of make up their own copy of the brand name drug. And then they have to prove that they can do it safely. And once you get that stamp of approval from the FDA, you can sell your drug. And sometimes there's only one generic, and sometimes there can be a dozen made by different companies.
I can imagine an investigative team doesn't just wake up one morning and decide, you know, here's what we're going to look into today. What indications did you have early on that something might be amiss here?
Well, there's been a lot of reporting about the state of factories. Many of our drugs are made in India, and there's been some reporting about what those factories' safety records are like and what they looked like. And we wanted to dig in further to see how the FDA was handling those issues, given that so many of our drugs came from the U.S. And when we started talking to inspectors, it didn't look good. It looked like they were either missing issues, or once they found them, it was those drugs were still making their way to the U.S.
Well, because you talked to inspectors themselves, I wonder, did you talk to those who are still active? Did you talk to retired ones? I'm very curious who was willing to talk to you.
That's a good question. So we had some former inspectors, and then there were some folks who were still inside the FDA or just very recently had left, either because of the new cuts with the Trump administration or just it had coincided with their retirement. But folks who had been in and around factories quite a bit in the last few years.
Got it. Now, when we talk about the companies that are showing very poor records, how many of those companies are within India, which seemed to be the focus of a number of the cases?
So quite a few. A lot of the problems are in are in India. And in our analysis, which looked at companies that were so bad they had been given an import ban, most of them were from India, because those were then the companies that also got an exemption to keep sending their drugs. Some in China. There was one in our analysis that was a factory that had been based in Hungary, but quite a bit are in India. I think about 20% of the world's factories for generic drugs are based in India.
So tell me about what an inspection, how it comes about, what it looks like. First of all, how often does the FDA show up to inspect their factories? And what are they specifically, or, at least on paper, what are they looking for?
Well, they don't show up near as often as they need to tell you that. There are lots of calls in Congress for doing more inspections of factories. Some factories can be go years and years with being inspected or have never been inspected by the FDA. But what they're looking for is basically the bare minimum of good manufacturing processes. So, can you meet the lowest bar to safely make drugs? So a lot of these drugs are sterile injectables, meaning that these are shots that are going to go directly into your veins or your muscles. So it's really important that they don't have contaminants and they're very free of impurities. And there are, as you can imagine, lots of rules of how you can make these drugs so they're safe. So picture workers on production lines in like full gowns and gloves, and there's lots of rules about what they can touch and when things need to be cleaned. So that's what an FDA inspector is looking for when he goes into the factory. So that means that the factories that get put on import alert have failed to meet these like very basic standards. And the FDA doesn't do import alerts often. So the companies that are put on import alert really are like the worst of the worst.
I want to go back to what you said about the FDA being questioned on how often it shows up to inspect the factories and that more inspections are needed. Are they defying their own guidelines? Is there some rule that they're supposed to be here so many times a year and they're just not doing it? Or are they basically on their own to do what they want?
They're basically on their own. So they are allowed to use what's called a risk-based assessment system, but it's very opaque. They won't tell you how those risk assessments are made or what the metrics are. But basically, the system will spit out which factories should be inspected in this year, and then those go out to the inspectors to go check on those factories.
Well,
And
please go
go
ahead.
ahead.
No, go on.
It's a function of how much staff they have in some cases, like they don't have enough inspectors. The GAO and Congress has hit on them pretty hard for their retention problems with inspectors. It's also a matter of priority. There's a lot of factories that make drugs, but we can see problems with this. Like a couple years ago, there was cases of a few people who died and several couple dozen who were severely injured by eye drops that were not pure. And that factory in India had never been inspected by the FDA.
Yikes. Well, the investigation found, and I'm quoting again, the FDA did not routinely test the medications to ensure that they were safe. Do any of these tests happen after the fact, not at the lab, but after they've been imported to the US and the FDA maybe randomly takes a sample and says, let's check this out?
You would think that the FDA would do that. I was surprised to learn in reporting this that the FDA rarely ever does any sort of testing like that. Mostly, it's left up to the companies themselves. They are supposed to test all the batches to make sure that they are in line with all quality standards before they ship them. And then that's it. We're really reliant on them. The FDA does no strategic testing for the drugs that come into the US, which is unlike the EU, which requires a lot more testing of their drugs that are coming in, particularly from countries like India and China that don't have the same standards that we have in other countries.
I'm talking to Megan Rose. She's with ProPublica. She is one of the writers behind Threat in Your Medicine Cabinet, the FDA's Gamble on America's Drugs. I do want to make room for you to bring us your questions and comments. You can go ahead and get in touch with us at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also drop us a line via email, yourcall@kalw.org, just in case you're not keen on going on the air. We'll still watch for that and get your question or comment on the air. I'm going to go here, Megan, to another excerpt. It captures the alarming sequence of events that you uncovered. We're talking specifically about Sun Pharma. And you say that Sun's Pharma transgressions were so egregious that the Food and Drug Administration imposed one of the government's harshest penalties, banning the factory from exporting drugs to the U.S. But the agency, worried about medication shortages, immediately undercut its mission to ensure the safety of America's drug supply. A secretive group inside the FDA gave the global manufacturer a special pass to continue shipping more than a dozen drugs to the U.S., even though they were made at the same substandard factory. That's a very intriguing phrase, a secretive group inside the FDA. Who are these people?
That's a great question. There is a led by what's called the drug shortage staff, and there's only a handful of them that work in the FDA. And for a long time, they were kind of on the fringes of the drug division within the FDA until about 2010, when we started to see a spike in drug shortages. And then this group got lifted to be working at the director of the drug division right in their office. And suddenly they had a seat at the table for all the discussions when it came to enforcing quality standards of drug factories, because they wanted to know, well, if we take action here, are we going to affect a drug shortage? And that became kind of the primary question that the FDA was asking before it, you know, gave a warning letter or other actions that could affect a factory's production. Mm-hmm. And so the folks in the room, we were told there was only about 6 to 8 people who were making these decisions. And so few people, even within the FDA, knew about it, that this reporting was a surprise to them. Even some commissioners we talked to had no idea that this practice had been going on for a long time. And by commissioner, I mean the head of the entire FDA agency.
That is just amazing that they're secretive with even within their own organization. So I want to ask you again about what their obligation is. Do they, for example, have to say publicly, this manufacturer is up for review? This manufacturer has been given a pass, or is all of this conducted within those offices and not necessarily public?
It is all within those offices. Now, there are technically some public documents, but you have to really know what you're looking for. The FDA publishes what it calls its import alert, and that shows all the factories that make drugs that have been banned from shipping to the United States. So you could find this kind of obscure webpage and scroll through it, and you will see that the factories are banned. And then there is language within this website that will say that these products are excluded, although it doesn't say it as plainly as that. There's a lot of jargon and coded language involved. You'd have to, like, quite literally use their provided dictionary to know what it is. And then it lists the drugs. So technically, yes, it's out there if you hunt for it, but you would only be able to find the most recent examples because there's no historical record of all the drugs that have been exempted over the years. We had to go through and compile that with some AI and data analysis. We also found that they had not mentioned this to Congress for most of the time that this practice has been in place, which we, according to our reporting, found at least back to 2012, if not a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. The first mention we could find to Congress was in a drug shortage report that they have to make annually. And there was one tiny footnote in the 2024 report that said that sometimes they give exemptions to import alerts. And that's it. And that's the only public mention they have made.
Wow. Now, when you talk about a specific med being pulled, you also mentioned that this is a decision based in part on shortages of that specific med. Is that specific med what is pulled from that agency, or pardon me, from that manufacturer, and they say you can't import this specific medication, or is the company as a whole put on notice?
So the company, it's not the company, it's a by factory. So you could be a company like Sun Pharma, have many factories, and each factory is individually inspected. And so the FDA is putting a ban on individual factories and all the medications that come out of that one factory. And then if that one factory happens to make a drug that is in shortage, or they have such a large market share that if they stopped making the drug, there would become a shortage, then the FDA gives them a pass to keep making that same drug.
It's interesting. I can't help but be put in mind of this is 20 years ago, but it never left my brain. 2005, Mother Jones did an investigation of the FDA and its relationship with its clients. And what it found was essentially the FDA treating the clients, i.e., the pharmaceutical companies, very deferentially, almost to the point you can paint that as the FDA being not subjects of their investigation, but clients that need to be pleased. I just wonder if there are any shadows of that in the investigation that you worked on.
We did not find any direct examples of corruption here, but I will say that the FDA's budget is in large part made up of user fees. And that means that the drug companies themselves pay the FDA. So when we were talking about how you get a generic drug to market here in the US, when you get an application approved, you have to pay the FDA a pretty hefty chunk of money. And then the FDA uses that money to do its job to review applications and make sure everybody is up to standard. And it's, I believe, something like 85% of their budget is made up of those user fees. So they are heavily reliant on the industry in order to operate.
Well, I want to talk more about what's being found at these agencies. And I mentioned some of the off-putting stuff, the blackish medication, materials tainted with unknown extraneous matter. What else was found with these inspections?
One of the most troubling thing that was been found repeatedly for almost all of these factories that have been banned and subsequently given a pass, there were problems with how the company was doing testing. So essentially, when they are looking at these drugs and saying, yes, this is safe, it meets the standards to go to the US so an American can put it in their body, those testing records had been manipulated. Now, there's lots of different ways in which they do this, but the end result is that there are drugs that don't pass the test that are being made to look like they had, and then those drugs are being shipped. It's pretty troubling track record that exists across the industry, particularly in India.
Well, is it, and again, I go back to whether there are rules or guidelines or just good ideas about what the FDA is held to. And when there are investigations, for example, one found that the agency involved didn't, pardon me, that the FDA itself didn't proactively inform the public when drugs were exempted from import bans. And one quote in particular really sticks out. In the hands of consumers, according to the FDA's longtime head of drug safety, the information would have caused, quote, some kind of frenzy. And that has echoes of, it's best if they not know. They can't handle that sort of information. I wonder how pervasive you found that attitude to be.
Entirely pervasive. Almost everyone we talked to said some version of what good would it be for the public to have this information because you can't do anything about it. And in some ways, that's true, right? Like if your insurance company says we will only pay for the generic version of this, and you get your drugs filled at your local pharmacy and they've bought one generic drug, you don't really have much of a choice. But you think that the public and people who are taking medication would still want the agency to decide for themselves if they think this drug from a factory that has metal shavings on its equipment and, pigeon feces on boxes of sterile meds, like all of these like really gross things, like water in the factories. Now, water sounds rather innocuous, but it can cause all kinds of problems when you're making a sterile drug and could lead to sepsis and other problems if you put it in your body. So it's very serious. And so the public just hasn't had any choice on this. And a lot of the leaders in the FDA said, well, it's our job to kind of make these decisions and we do it behind the scenes. And then, we wouldn't make these choices if we didn't think they were safe. And that should be good enough for the public and for Congress.
Well, we've already established that there are no rules or very specific guidelines about how often the FDA has to go inspect these places. What about communicating the problems to the public? Are there any rules or guidelines, anything that it is suggested that they follow in terms of how bad a situation has to be before they must open it up to the public?
I do not believe there are any specific rules that require them to let the public know about these kind of decisions. Now, in that drug shortage report to Congress that I mentioned earlier, that is required of them annually. And one of the questions that Congress wants to know is, how has the agency used what they call regulatory flexibility? And that's where essentially the FDA has bent their rules a little bit to deal with the drug shortage. And this import alert exemption for certain drugs in shortage would fall under that category of regulatory flexibility. So since 2013, the FDA has at the very least been required to tell Congress in this report what they're doing. And as I mentioned earlier, they had not until last year in a footnote. But other than that, it's pretty loosey-goosey about how and what they tell the public. There are certain rules about what needs to be on their website, but these kind of decisions, it's really at the discretion of the leadership of whether or not they tell people about it. And we asked, why were you not raising the alarm? Like, this is not something that was happening every once in a while. This was a pattern and practice for more than a decade, and the FDA stayed silent. So no one had the opportunity to change the equation because they didn't even know it was happening.
Wow. So when you talked to the lawmakers, or when you look at the lawmakers' investigations of what's happening at the FDA, what questions they do ask, as you just mentioned, I'm wondering if you've ever found evidence that the government, any branch of government, has looked at what the FDA has done, be it contamination or anything else, and said, you have to change this rule right now, or passed a law that says the FDA must do this right now. I mean, in short, how much power has the government taken into its hands with the FDA over anything?
So there has been some overhauls to the FDA legislation, but not for a long time. So one of the last major changes to how the FDA would operate was in 2012. Mm-hmm. And there have been different changes to rules. Like, they, as globalization meant that more drugs were being manufactured overseas, Congress was looking at, well, are we doing the same amount of inspections overseas as we are domestically? And they changed the rules about how inspections should operate. And that's when they really fully adopted this risk-based system. Mm-hmm. And there have been rules here or there, like Congress recently has demanded that the FDA start doing unannounced inspections overseas. So domestically, if the FDA wants to walk into a drug factory in the US, they can do so at any point, anytime. They don't have to give the company a heads up. But in India, most inspections are announced. Like, they get warning, and sometimes it can be, you know, 6-8 weeks. It's enough time to like clean up your act and know the FDA is coming. And so Congress recently has said, well, we want you to show up in surprise at these overseas factories like you do in the U.S. There's lots of complicating factors to that. Like, you have to get a visa to go into India. So that is in itself a little bit of a heads up for the companies that are there, but they are trying. So those are the kind of things that Congress has been focused on. It's been really keen on inspections of overseas factories.
Got it. You know, another way for the FDA to track problems is monitoring consumer feedback. You know, they do hear from drug companies and from medical professionals that, you know, this person took a diabetes drug and they immediately broke into hives or had a fever or whatever. And I wonder what you've been able to find about complaints or adverse effects actually being tied to subsequent restrictions on a lab.
Oh, that's a great question. We have not found very much on that at all. And it's surprising, actually, because when we were looking particularly at complaints about the drugs that had been exempted from banned factories, and we found a lot. Just for Sun and one other company alone, three factories, there were 600 complaints since the exemptions went into place, including 9 deaths, 70 hospitalizations. So some serious things had arisen. But what happens after those complaints come in is very vague. Like, there's not a lot of rules. The FDA has what they call a monitoring system where they're supposedly looking for patterns of harm in these complaints. But what you normally see if something comes up is a recall. So maybe the FDA notices that there's a certain amount of dangerous complaints that seems tied to one particular drug made by one company. They'll go to that company and there might be a recall issued if the company agrees, because the FDA cannot demand a recall, but the company can do one with the FDA's encouragement. But whether or not you see like another inspection coming in or a company getting put on import ban, we cannot make that link. We have not seen that.
I can only give you about a minute to answer this question, but have you seen anything indicated with the DOGE cuts that the FDA is being targeted?
Oh, for sure. There's been hundreds of folks from the FDA that have been let go, and it affects quite heavily on the drug division. So the same people who are needed to do inspections and to approve drugs and to make sure that factories are doing it safely, they have been let go. There's
Wow.
far fewer of them to do that hard job.
Megan Rose, I thank you for all the cheerful news from the front. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. Megan Rose joins us now. She's an author of one of the investigative teams at ProPublica, this time focusing on Threat in Your Medicine Cabinet, the FDA's gamble on America's drugs. If you missed any part of today's show, if you want to check out Your Call's previous shows, visit Your Call on KALW. That's KALW.org/yourcall. You can email us with your questions, comments, and show suggestions, yourcall@KALW.org. Be sure to tune in Monday for our One Planet series when guest host Ethan Elkind will be on hand. He'll discuss the effects of EPA budget cuts on air quality and the possible sale of millions of federal lands, acreage into private hands. Andrew Stelzer produced today's show. Many thanks to him, and thanks as well to Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. I'm Angie Cuero, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Thanks for tuning in to Your Call.
All of that is next on Left, Right, and Center.